Welcome back, everyone, to Keeping Current, the podcast from ERS and HVM, which is designed to plug you into the world of electrical power systems. I'm your host, Joe Dwyer, and in this episode, we're diving into the critical role of electrical safety training and NEDA certification in ensuring compliant, reliable, and safe electrical systems. We're going to uncover how mastering these standards not only protects your workforce, but also enhances operational efficiency and reduces downtime. Joining me today is Steve Park, training director at ERS, who has spent years teaching programs that prepare technicians and engineers and meet the highest standards of excellence and safety. Well, Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Glad to be here.
Well, Steve, you and I have known each other for quite a while. We're both ex-Air Force electricians, both high voltage like yourself and the low voltage side on my end. And it's just good to have you here. So I appreciate you making the time. I know you're busy.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, let's start with the big picture. Safety training has not always been a part of the electrical system, but recently it has been a part much more. But in today's compliance-driven world, it is more essential than ever. From your perspective as a training director, what has changed? And not only that, why is it structured electrical training such a critical part of compliance and reliability now?
OSHA and our electrical safe work practices have evolved over the past five decades. When I first entered the workforce in the late 1970s, there were some basic rules around electrical safety, but they tended to be a bit more generalized than what we have today. Today's safety rules, regulations, and best practices have evolved into very effective systems when they're used and applied correctly. If workers follow these rules and regulations and best practices, they have a really good chance of avoiding any serious injuries should an incident occur. Now, we still can't guarantee equipment will work properly, and there's still a few unforeseen and uncontrollable conditions that might occur, but we've come a long way in reducing the number of serious and life-threatening events. Today, a lot of accidents are the result, I hate to say it, of the human factor. Okay. We make mistakes. We may take unnecessary risks, or we don't take the necessary precautions. One of the most effective ways to avoid a shock hazard is to test before touch. We've all heard that. We all know that. But as simple and as obvious as that is, I've seen so many accidents that are still happening today because they skip that one vital step. Over the years, we've evolved our safety programs from a few basic safety rules to where we are today, thanks in a large part to the detailed requirements outlined in NFPA 70E. However, these requirements are not always easy to understand and implement correctly. It takes focused and effective training to help ensure workers understand not only the rules, but why the rules exist and how to correctly implement those rules.
That was excellent analysis of the need there and the growth of how we started and now we are where we are. But across the industry, there's a growing emphasis on documented training, demonstrated competency, verified verification. How do you see that translating in day-to-day ops? And what does effective training actually look like in practice?
Yeah, well, I like to break the learning process down into three key components. The first is education. This is where the student learns the expectations and the why. The second part of that is training. And this is where the student in a controlled environment gains experience in doing various tasks the right way, the safe way. And then finally, the third is demonstration and validation. And this is where the employee gets on-the-job training under close supervision. They learn how to apply what they've learned in a real-world setting. Once they've successfully demonstrated their skills and knowledge, then they get signed off and are considered qualified for that task.
Beyond compliance, how organizations turn training into something that really drives safety culture and performance improvement. Like, how do you measure that?
Yeah, like you said, having the right culture within a company is paramount. Now, I've seen organizations that have safety posters all over their facility, but often I find out it's just a facade. You observe workers not wearing the minimal safety equipment, such as safety glasses or gloves, or even proper clothing. It's all window dressing, and there's no real safety culture. Safety must start at the top and flow down to the employees. Leadership must have a vested interest in safety and in training and employee development and show support through their actions. Simple things like bringing all the employees in for a periodic safety meeting can be extremely important to drive the safety culture of a company or an office. Having that face-to-face time with employees and having meaningful discussions about safe work practices can help drive the culture. During these meetings, I always like to reinforce my golden rule of safety. I remind everyone that they should never do anything they don't feel safe doing. If they don't feel safe doing something, stop. Use your stop work authority and evaluate the situation. I always say, find a better way.
Uh-huh.
Find a way to increase the margin of safety.
As I provide some safety training to clients, those are the key things I try to have transferred to the students, that they understand that. I could not agree more. So now let's talk about NIDA certification, because it's really the foundation of how ERS and HVM demonstrate technical excellence. For someone who's new to the field, however, what does it mean to be NIDA certified, and what does that certification truly represent to the customer or the end user?
NIDA certification is very important, as it's one of the few ways we can demonstrate an employee's competency to a client. While we may know and trust our employee's competency because we've seen them in action, for the customer, the NIDA certification provides a standardized and independent proof of their knowledge and their competencies.
I have to agree, the NIDA certification carries a lot of weight.
Absolutely.
Yeah. From a training and development standpoint, though, what does it take to prepare someone for the NIDA certification? It doesn't appear that it's all classroom based. Is there a mix of hands-on, field experience, and hopefully mentoring?
Yeah, absolutely. The NIDA certification is a balance of the academics or knowledge and the skills developed through field experience. Someone with just book smarts, for example, it's unlikely that they're going to be able to pass a NIDA exam. While there are questions that you might be able to answer by simply being familiar with NIDA testing specifications, many of the questions are geared toward having hands-on experience, and that comes from working in the field.
Uh-huh.
And the higher the level of NIDA certification, the more the hands-on experience is needed to pass the exam. And in addition to that, mentoring and coaching are also key components for success. Much of what's learned in the field by our engineers comes from on-the-job experience. Formal education and training alone won't really produce an effective tester.
That's good to see, because it's not always like that in the real world. I would say, you know, in the military, we always had NCOs with more experience that would know what to do, or officers. But I think now what we have to understand is, well, once a technician achieves certification, how does that benefit both the individual and the company they work for? I mean, with all that mentoring, how do we implement that for the company?
You know, while we help the employee prepare for their certification exam, they're the ones that have to put in the sweat equity and prepare for the exam.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy exam. So when an employee does pass their NEDA certification, it's a big deal. And of course, with that does come more responsibilities. And more responsibilities means the employee has more value. And so this is a win-win situation for the employee and the company. The employee becomes more valuable, and we tend to rely on them to do more for us and make us successful. Thanks.
Well, now that we've realized, what it takes, you've built and overseen a lot of training programs, not just for certification, but also for ongoing safety and compliance. The question is, what separates a truly effective training program from one that just delivers information?
Yeah, sure. And we touched on this a little earlier, but I th think the best way to answer that question is with a quote attributed to, I think, Ben Franklin. And he said, "Tell me and I'll forget. Teach me and I remember. Involve me and I learn." And that
Yeah.
may not be the exact quote, but it gets the message across, right?
Right.
Simply delivering information, or what I call classroom preaching, does not engage the employee. They're not going to learn. Technical training differs greatly from, let's say, college courses that an engineering student might take. Effective technical training is more than delivering the information and reading about something. You
Right.
have to engage the student. And while this process may start with the delivery of information, the preaching, if you will, that can't be all there is. The student needs to understand the why. They need to learn the how. And so the academics or knowledge part of learning has to be immediately followed by or incorporate the training or demonstration component. That must then be closely followed by on-the-job training. So it takes all these components, these three key components, to have a successful training program.
I think when you do things by a process or a procedure and it's documented, it's sort of like flying an airplane. There's numerous checks that you have to go through, and you have the initial instruction and then confirmation of instruction, and things like that truly reduce the risk of an accident or things like that. So, and when you have the training that that we're talking about, both the safety and the technical combined, it makes for a very dynamic ability to ensure, a safe shutdown or a safe maintenance program implementation or something like that. So now my next question, what role do leadership and culture play in that? Because that's, if you ask me, that's where it all starts. So in other words, how can management make sure that that's what's being taught and the classroom actually sticks once people are back in the field or on the floor or out on the site?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it starts at the top. It starts with leadership, and leadership has been very supportive of what we've done. And so from a safety perspective, we have our qualified electrical worker program, and our QEW helps ensure that once an employee has completed the safety training requirements, that they can then demonstrate all the necessary safety measures and procedures to ensure all safe work practices are being adhered to and followed.
Yeah, and we have NFPA 70E to thank for that, the new stand, the latest standard, because that's part of the requirements for a qualified electrical worker, and it's to be documented. So if anybody has any questions on that, they can just get to the NFPA 70E and look up a qualified electrical worker, and it'll have all the information for you. Let's connect this back to compliance. We know 70B now uses the shall language, which means documented maintenance and training are mandatory. So how do organizations make sure their teams, their groups stay compliant without getting overwhelmed by all the documentation and testing issues when they are constantly evolving? How do we do that?
Yeah, we have 70B, we have 70E, and we know there's a direct correlation between safety and maintenance. Keeping workers safe is not possible without effective maintenance of the electrical equipment. If electrical equipment is not maintained, it may not operate as intended and unexpectedly expose workers to increased risks and hazards. And because of this close relationship between maintenance and safety, I was glad to see NFPA 70B convert from a recommended practice to a standard a few years ago. So, keeping up with these changes in standards can easily be overwhelming. And the changes can often drive changes to requirements related to safe work practices or even maintenance requirements. And it's difficult to simply read these standards and get a full understanding of their requirements and intent. So I recommend for anyone responsible for implementing maintenance programs or safety programs, I strongly recommend attending classes to gain a deeper understanding of the various industry standards. I still remember way back in my early days in the industry, I attended my first class for the National Electrical Code. And before attending that code class, I had no idea how it was organized or how to use it effectively. But after I got done with the class, it was like the fog had lifted and I could clearly understand the requirements and locate information and use the code. So over years, I've attended several classes on various industry standards, and those classes have resulted in my understanding and having a good understanding of these standards today. And for those that have had a maintenance program in the past, compliance with the new NFPA 70B requirements shouldn't be that difficult. Much of 70B is aligned with the NEDA testing specifications and recommendations and other acceptable industry standard best practices. So if you've been following the NEDA testing specifications or other best practices in the past, there's not a lot of differences to ensuring you're also meeting the new 70B requirements. However, for those companies and facilities that have been neglecting good maintenance practices in the past, they're likely going to continue to struggle with compliance with 70B. And this goes back to having a good company culture. In the past, if you chose not to do what is considered right in the eyes of acceptable maintenance practices under the guise of I'm helping improve our profits or meeting strict budget constraints or helping with accomplishing uptime goals. Now, with the new 70B standard, you no longer have that choice to avoid what is now considered required maintenance. Adequate maintenance on electrical equipment has a direct effect on the performance and therefore the safety of electrical equipment.
And with the different industries that require, large power systems, reliability is key. If we have a oil refinery that has an electrical fire and production goes shuts down, well, that affects us in a one way. If we have a data center or a utility due to storms, we have transformers and people are out of power, hospitals are affected. So reliability is key these days. And 70B, just like you said, is there to ensure that we address those issues and do everything we can to increase reliability, but as well as safety. So for companies that may not have an internal training department, what's the best way to get started? And are there, external programs or partnerships that they can accelerate workforce development for them?
Absolutely. Industry subject matter experts and companies like ERS and HVM can definitely assist owners and operators of electrical distribution equipment to help them ensure compliance. We can help evaluate what they're currently doing, identify gaps, and provide a plan to ensure full compliance.
And finally, what would you give to someone who's looking to elevate their own career through NEDA certification or advanced electrical training?
My advice would be to get as much education, training, and exposure to our industry as possible. Read any available industry literature. Read the operator's manual of all the test equipment you use. Read the user manuals for all the equipment you're testing. And there's an enormous amount of information out there available online. It's so easy to find information and learn in today's cyber world. However, while information can be found online, There's no replacement for formal learning and hands-on lab activities, especially for the more in-depth and complex topics. And like I said before, it's a great time to be in this industry. There's so much going on. There's so much to learn. There's new technologies. There's advancements in protective relays, developments in electrical safety. There's never a dull moment. Now, if you're looking to get your NEDA certification or get to the next level of NEDA certification, I strongly recommend committing a few hours every week over a period of 3 to 6 months to prepare for your next NEDA exam. Now, there's still advantages of cramming immediately before an exam, but there's so much to learn when preparing for a NEDA exam. It's best to give yourself some time and pace yourself. And also on things like the NEDA 3 level exam, there's an increased focus on topics such as communications, fiber optic cables, electric vehicle requirements, digital logic, and commissioning. Now, you may not encounter these in your daily work assignments, but you're going to need to have knowledge about these topics to pass the exam. And there's a lot of people out there that have test anxiety. I talk to them all the time. That's a real thing. So getting over this anxiousness and being able to relax and focus on the exam can be beneficial and help you perform more efficiently and effectively when taking tests.
Well, I have to reiterate what we discussed earlier about how technology changes and you need to keep up on new systems. When you mentioned the new NEDA Level 3 fiber optic EV systems and commissioning, those are all new things that are coming into play now. So just like we discussed, you got to stay current. You need the training that is being offered. So, Steve, yeah, I can't absolutely thank you enough for sharing your insights. It's clear that electrical safety training and NEDA certification aren't just about compliance. They're about building a safer, more reliable, and more confident workforce. I mean, when I was in the field and, you know, we knew what we were doing and things were going well, it almost was like, wow, this is fun. You know, we're making a change. We're affecting the impact of a lot of people with reliable power at this plant. So it's just a good feeling. So
absolutely.
Thank you. So that's it for this episode of Keeping Current, everybody. If you found today's conversation valuable, make sure to subscribe. Please leave us a review and tune in every other Thursday for more expert insights like we've had with Steve Park. So connect with us on LinkedIn and stay in the loop. And as always, thanks for listening. And until next time, keep current.